Welcome to Bobby Osinski's Inner Circle. I'm Bobby Osinski, and this is a show all about music, music production, and the music business. My guest today is Alex Jacobson from Auratone. But first, let's talk about the fact that people are spending less time on social media. Yeah, it's true. I think social media might have run its course in terms of being the focal point of many people's lives. And every platform is suffering. This latest study looks at not only the United States, but the UK, Germany, India, Spain, Brazil, basically everywhere that has lots of people, and has found that for the most part, Instagram and Twitter down about 24%, Snapchat 16%, even Facebook is down by 8%. Who would have thought? And it turns out that people are spending less and less time on platforms like Twitter. Facebook still has a lot of people. Once you get there, you tend to spend a lot of time there. And really, when it comes down to it for musicians, if you do want people to know what you're doing, Facebook is still the place. Now, obviously, you're going to put your work up on YouTube, so everybody knows that you have something new, a new release, a new video. But that being said, if you want to get the word out, Facebook is still the place, even though we keep on hearing reports of its demise. It's not true. What tends to be coming on really fast are messaging apps. So what we're seeing is Facebook Messenger and WhatsApp. Very, very powerful right now. And those are the things that are trending. And when you talk to internet gurus, they basically say that's the future. It's not so much the social media platforms, it's the messaging platforms that are going to take off in the future. They may not stay that way. As we've seen, everything kind of goes through a cycle when it comes to social media and basically everything online. But that being said, look for messaging to be the next big thing. And what's especially interesting about messaging is the fact that messaging isn't so much broadcast anymore. It's more one-to-one. So now we're getting back to the old word of mouth, you know, whispering in someone's ear in order to spread the word. It's funny how what's old is new again. If you have any questions or comments, you can send them to questions at bobbyointercircle.com. Don't forget to check out my new Brand Your Music Crash Course, as well as my 101 Mixing Tricks program, and my other online courses as well. Go to bobbyosinskicourses.com to learn more. Another interesting trend that's happening is the fact that there's a lot going on online, just in terms of what we can order online and what we can do online. And there were two examples that really came to my attention this week. One is a company called JukeDeck, or a platform, I should say, called JukeDeck. If you're like me, every time you do a video, you want to put some music behind it. Again, if you're like me, you probably think the same thing. Well, I'll just do the music myself. I can do it faster than I can pick out music. And then you find out that it's taking you a lot longer than you thought to actually compose the music and then put it together so it sounds good. It's not an easy task, and the people that do it for a living have my highest regard because, again, if you have to crank stuff out over and over, it does really take a lot of talent to do that, especially, again, when you're doing it on an everyday basis. So the alternative would be to go to a library and use library music, and not many people really want to do that when it's all said and done. But there is something called JukeDeck, which is pretty interesting. And what this will do, it will allow you to put the time that you need. So in other words, if the video is a minute and 30 seconds, you put a minute and 30, or if you only need 124 worth of music, you put that in. The mood and the instrumentation. And what it will do is it will crank out a piece of music for you. And it's actually pretty good. I'm surprised. It doesn't sound, even though it's artificial intelligence is putting it together, it doesn't sound like it's done by a computer at all. It actually sounds pretty reasonable. This is called JukeDeck. Now, this piece of music is free if you give JukeDeck.com a credit. And if you don't, you pay 99 cents. And that's if you're either an individual or in a small company that's less than 10 people. If you're in a bigger company that's more than 10 people, it costs you $21.99 for the piece of music, which is nothing when it's all said and done. And JukeDeck owns the music. They own all the rights. They own the copyright. However, if you wish to own that piece, you pay $199. So this sounds pretty good on a lot of different levels because, first of all, the music is actually reasonable. I can't believe I'm saying this because artificial intelligence is putting it together, but I've tried it a number of times and it's actually come up with something that's been very usable and something that I wouldn't be embarrassed with. So go check that out. It's fairly inexpensive. Is it putting people out of business? I don't think so. From the standpoint that this is serving a particular niche that probably is not being addressed by people that do this for a living. So I actually think that this is kind of filling that sweet spot, so to speak, the need in the market. So we'll see. Juke Deck, it's called. The other thing that's interesting is Fender has come out with their mod shop online. It used to be when you wanted a custom Fender guitar or bass, you'd have to go to a dealer and then you'd order it and hope that it would show up the way you wanted. Usually it would take about 3 or 4 months for it to arrive. And we're talking about a custom color or, you know, just something very simple. Usually it's a custom color that people used to want. But now the mod shop has come out and this will allow you to basically build your own guitar. Not only that, it's made in Corona, so it's a California guitar, and you can have it within 30 days, which for a custom guitar is pretty amazing. It's really great. So there's 4 different types of guitars that you could buy. You can get a custom Strat, a custom Tele, a jazz bass, or a P bass. The cost is $1,649 as a base price, and depending on what you add or what you change, that price is probably going to go up a little bit, but it's really not all that expensive. Now, what can you change? Well, you can change the body, for instance, the type of material, type of wood, the type of color. And the color will dictate the wood many times. So in other words, I don't remember exactly what it is, but there are certain colors that you can't get with certain types of wood and vice versa. You can change the pickguard, for instance, the electronics, the type of pickups that you get. You can change the bridge, the tuners, the neck, the fingerboard. So there's an awful lot of choices for $1,649. And just the fact that you get it within 30 days, I think it's pretty amazing. So this is the mod shop. You could either order it online, or in fact, you can go through a dealer. Usually this is a better way because I think at least you'll get a discount through a dealer. I'm not sure that's the case, but I presume if you go to a dealer and you say, okay, I want to buy this through you, but let's order online together, then you'll get a discount. Somebody check me on that to see if that's actually the case, but I think it is. Anyway, I think this is a really good step in the right direction. The person that's actually behind Fender's Mod Shop was behind Nike's ID. And for Nike, what that allowed you to do is build a custom pair of shoes. Who would have thought that you could actually do that? Who would have thought that would have been as successful as it is? So that being said, if it could be successful with something like sneakers, it certainly will be successful with guitars. And Fender is going to roll this out to other things as well. Apparently, within the next year, they're also going to have a mod shop for amplifiers, and they may even have something for accessories as well. So check that out. It's on the Fender site, and it's called Mod Shop, M-O-D-S-H-O-P. Aritone sound cubes were once a mainstay alternative monitor in just about every studio in the world, but they just about fell off the map after the passing of founder Jack Wilson. Today, Jack's grandson, Alex Jacobson, is in the process of relaunching Aritone, and he has a great story about how he's bringing the company back to prominence once again. I spoke with Alex from his office in Nashville via Skype. So give me some backstory on Aritone. I've been a user for a long time myself, and I go back to the 70s anyway, and it was a must-have way back when. But give me some of the backstory.
So I worked with my grandfather, Jack Wilson, founded the company actually back in 1958, to be exact, when the corporation was started. He actually started building like home speakers and studio model, all kinds of different products at that time. He had a whole line of speakers, kind of high, he was making hi-fi speakers. And throughout the 60s, he actually started, he was in the military, and the first place he actually operated, his first operation, he was renting out a small warehouse space on the military, actually one of the Navy bases there in San Diego. Mm-hmm. He kind of got a good deal, obviously, they helped has space for people who want to start businesses and stuff. So that's actually how it started. He was on a military property, a little warehouse. That's how he started building the speakers. An actual 5C came about in the 1970s, and it was actually originally developed as a home auxiliary speaker, and just kind of morphed into kind of the what's known for today as a small reference monitor.
Mm-hmm.
There were a lot of different versions of the SoundCube, right? I remember there's a 5C, but there are some other versions too, right?
Yes. Are you specifically asking about the 5C or some of the other models that were made over the years?
Yeah, well, there was numerous models, right? There was actually a lot of products, as I recall.
Yeah, the T6, the Q, C66, the T5, a lot of different kind of the Primo sound cubes. He kind of made, I would say, you know, there could have been 10 or 15 different ones over the years, but I think the one that obviously resonates the most with people and one that was the only main seller over the years is obviously the 5C. There's always a lot of other products that came out. I would say the T6 was fairly popular. That was made to kind of compete with the NS10, Yamaha NS10, but nothing else really kind of took off. I mean, the 5C, once you had, Orton always had a reputation for the small studio monitor versus the bigger ones.
I remember back, I was writing one of my first books, and it would have been in, I guess the early 2000s. And I made a reference to the 5C. And I wanted to do some research, so I went online. Well, gee, this had to be later than 2000. Anyway, I remember going online and not being able to come up with anything. There was no website. There was very little of any kind of information that was available online. The one thing I did find was everybody wanted to find parts and couldn't. So there was a big demand just for that, if nothing else. So how did it come about that you decided that you're going to bring the sound cubes into the future here, into the present, I should say?
Well, I was in college, and I know our family had been involved in this, my aunt and my mom specifically, when my grandpa Jack passed away in 2005, and that's what a lot of the, you know, people couldn't find some of the parts and stuff, because we were taking time to kind of figure out what to do with the company, and my family was getting everything organized. And when I went to college, when I was in college in the 2010 to 2012 era, I kind of was looking, doing more research about the business, and my mom and aunt were still, you know, contemplating obviously reviving it. And I know my aunt was still kind of selling some parts and old inventory to people, and I kind of said, well, who's going to do this? I saw there's other knockoffs out on the market making replicas, and I kind of decided, hey, there's still a market for this, and just kind of went to decide that permission. I said, I'll have to do this, you know, what we need to do, and that's kind of how it started a few years ago. So it took a lot of hard work, but that's kind of the story there.
Yeah, what was the startup like? It's never easy to start a company. It's a little bit easier when you have an existing brand like Auratone, so that was kind of good. But you had to start from scratch, it sounds like, pretty much, besides that, right?
Scratch in the sense that, you know, luckily, my grandfather and the business before everyone was involved was very good at keeping records and all the designs and where we're getting parts and suppliers and contacts and all the original designs and everything like that. So there was some kind of foundation to build upon and start doing the research and homework and the research and design element. But in the sense that, you know, manufacturing and having product available to sell, and in a sense, it was very much starting from scratch, you know, from ground zero in that sense. So that, you know, obviously, which also obviously the Auratone was very well known still is today with a lot of student engineers, which is a plus to kind of get things going quicker, but also brings its own set of challenges in the sense that, you know, you come out with this product and everyone, there's already instantly demand for it, which is challenging if you want to have more responsibility to business, you know, you come out of the product and all of a sudden everyone wants it. That kind of actually brings its own set of challenges with keeping up with demand.
Well, if the challenge is keeping up with demand, that's not so bad in the grand scheme of things.
You know? I think, in the beginning, obviously, there's a lot more, you know, challenges today in the sense with, you know, a lot more competition nowadays versus when my grandfather was doing it back in the 70s, 80s, and 90s. A lot more other brands out in the market now. So, you know, just some people still obviously recognize the brand or familiar with it, but it still has challenges and getting that message across and kind of re-teaching people the purpose of the speakers and the new generation, if that makes sense.
Yeah, well, you know, again, that's one of the things that's way different than it used to be. I remember when we were using it in the 70s, it was a big thing because we wanted to duplicate what the sound of a radio would be, a speaker in a radio, or the sound of, you know, a small car speaker or something. And that was actually the best reference. And, you know, rather than having to go out in the car or, you know, whatever the case. So now it's a little different because today's engineer thinks differently. And really it's a different approach than it used to be. So is there some sort of re-education process that you see?
Yeah, not necessarily in that sense. I think what you're kind of saying there, people don't want to put it, you know, obviously I've heard that before, people, you know, the whole car speaker thing, and it's much easier to kind of people say, oh, I'll just get a, you know, another crappy speaker and use, but it's nice to have something that's in a professional setting to use instead, you know, to hear what it's going to sound like. But I don't really think, I think a lot of people, even the younger generation, still know, they're aware of its purpose, but maybe not as much as a lot of the older generation who kind of grew up like you in the 80s and kind of saw them in every studio versus today, the guy with his computer. And, you know, back in the day, it was just a lot of bigger studios. And now you have the era where people just have their laptop and their computer in their room. I think that's more the challenge, is getting that across to that new generation that's kind of in that setting.
You know, I could see a challenge in the fact that for years now, gee, maybe it's a whole generation here, we've been used to powered speakers, powered monitors in the studio. Mm-hmm. And everything is powered no matter what. You just don't even give it a second thought anymore about, you know, supplying an amplifier. And that's not the way it is with the SoundCube. So is there any resistance based on that?
There is some. I think that's one of the bigger challenges as well is, you know, back in the 80s and 70s, that wasn't the industry standard. You know, versus today, amplified speakers, like you said, are just kind of not even a thought. And that's the biggest question we get a lot is, oh, what amplifier do we use with it? Or when there's going to be an active version? I think that's, you know, we kind of decided when we started this that we just keep it simple with kind of the original design, or you make it passive like they were. And obviously we haven't ruled out coming out with an active version in the future, or personally right now we're kind of looking into having our own mini amplifier or amplifier that's packaged with it. And also a lot of people, it's another thing that's kind of getting across, is it's not as simple as just sticking the amp in the box. You know, a lot of the characteristics of the design of the 5C, as simple as it is it's kind of a passive design in a sense. Once you put an amplifier in there, and depending on what kind of amplifier it is, it's not going to get the same performance for its intended purpose sometimes. So that's kind of the challenge, is designing, you know, having an amp that's compatible. It still doesn't change the characteristics of what it needs to be.
Well, acoustically it would change everything because you're talking about a cube. First of all, if you fill that cube up with electronics, then you're changing the damping characteristics, if nothing else. So, yeah, you're changing the acoustics of the whole thing, the response of it, if you fill it up. I can see that.
Correct. Yeah, that's kind of, that's exactly kind of that, you know, that I was trying to get at there. And I think it's, you know, obviously there's other ways to get an amp in the box, you know, having a separate chamber and different things that you can do to maybe minimize that, but at the same time, if you change anything on a box, even if it's an inch of different space, or you widen it or extend how deep it is, you're going to get a totally different response, even a slight change.
How difficult was it to get the same components? I mean, I guess the major component is a speaker, right? Wouldn't be so much the cabinet.
Yeah, I would say very difficult. A lot of suppliers, obviously, and this is, you know, what issues my grandfather had over the years, and that's why you've seen seven or eight different variations of the 5C, is because parts are just not always available. Where you get one parts, or let's say specifically a speaker cone or a voice coil or anything like that, you know, the company or where you're manufacturing from or where you're supplying it from, we go out of business, you got to find another place. And that's why they always listen to all the variations over the years. They're all different in some way, just because you guys, that's the big challenge, is always getting, you know, especially more so back then than today. But I think that was a big challenge at first, is finding parts. You know, a lot of the companies that my grandfather worked with or in the past, or where he was getting parts from, were no longer in business. Of course, the dynamics of business and supplying have changed a lot in the past 30 years. So that was a big challenge, is finding compatible parts that were what we're looking for to get the same intended purpose of the speaker.
Yeah, you know, I've talked to other manufacturers that were, you know, previous to you coming back, that were trying to come out with a 5C knockoff, and that was the big deal for them, finding a driver. And I can remember talking to one guy saying, yeah, you know, we searched all over, we finally have one driver that sounds just like the old ones. And I remember thinking to myself, yeah, but which version of the old ones? Because they're all a little different. So, you know, it's a whole thing of, okay, which one do you hold up as the gold standard? So, and how did you do that, for that matter?
Well, it took time. I happened to have almost every version in somewhat mint condition that, you know, we kept over the years, that my grandfather's kept for his testing, kind of things that we took when we had all the inventory over, and we spent a lot of time with the drivers and testing each one, and we kind of found different variations that we liked better than others, if that made sense. Mm-hmm. There's one, particularly in the mid-80s, that we liked a lot, that we kind of tried to replicate, and which ours sounds very similar to now. And it's always an interesting question, though. I mean, even the other day, you get people, you know, a speaker, we get a lot of people sometimes email me and say, oh, or call me or talk to me and say, oh, how does this speaker sound exactly to the new one or my old one? And it's a tough question, because the speaker, you know, there's not many mint condition or tones out there left. I mean, a speaker that you see just a normal, your 5C out there, it's not going to sound like it did 40 years ago, 40 years ago. I think a lot of people, the thing we have to, it's hard for people to understand sometimes, is they hear a new one, oh, it sounds a little different, or it sounds different than this one. You know, I've had gone to studios with, you know, some of my old 5C, and I'll compare them to their 5Cs, which are exact same model, and they sound completely different.
Yeah.
You know, you never know, especially these speakers haven't been sitting in a home environment at low volumes. I mean, a lot of people have been pushing these, professionals and studios have been pushing these really hard. So they definitely have wear and tear, and they just don't sound like they did when they were brand new, if that makes sense.
Yeah. What's the best amp? Which one do you recommend, or do you recommend, you know, certain specs?
So, you know, the best kind of, they're 25 watt to 30 watt speakers, and I usually recommend something that's about double the power, or, you know, which is at least the same amount of power, double the amount of power. You don't want to have to, on an amp that's, it's actually worse to have an amp that has not enough power than more power.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we kind of recommend something in the 50 watt range, or 60 watt range. There's actually, at least here in the U.S., there's lots of amps that work well with them. One we recommend in general is the Samson Servo 120A and the Elesis RA150 that retail for under $200, and they've been very popular here with people using them. We actually have some dealers who actually package the Samson Servo and 5C together. So it's been pretty popular so far. There's also a mini amp that we like. Topping makes a mini amplifiers little 60-watt mini amplifiers that are really nice. They retail for about $200 as well. So they don't need a big expensive, you know, $1,000 amp. Mm-hmm. We get that question a lot too. Say, oh, is this amp going to sound this super expensive, nice amp? Is it, you know, going to be better than, you know, a $200 amp? And the question obviously is, you know, the nicer amp, you may get some better performance out of it, but it's not necessarily needed for what you're trying to get out of 5C.
Yeah, and it actually might be too good for it in a way, because as you say, it's what is the end result? What are you trying to get? And that might defeat the purpose in many ways if the amp is too good. I mean, you mentioned before about maybe packaging something that you guys make. That would be a really good idea, you know, come out with your own package.
Yeah, it would, and that's another thing we're kind of starting to work on now. Still a little ways off, but we're kind of getting things organized and doing some research and design on that and what it's going to take and how difficult it's going to be to do to have something that's like a little mini amplifier, maybe not necessarily a mini amplifier, but something that's perfect for the 5C. And there are reasons behind that idea is because a lot of the other, you know, a lot of people get different varying responses out of the speaker because depending on what amplifier they're using, you're going to get a different response. So sometimes people will say, oh, I'm getting this response. And that person will say, oh, I'm hearing this instead. And so what amplifier are you using? Is it the right amplifier? So it's a problem that could be solved by having one amplifier to recommend with it and package with it that would kind of solve that issue of having different responses across the board with everybody.
Are you recommending a certain type of speaker cable as well?
You know, nothing that isn't really picky on the speaker cable, in particular.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't really think we usually recommend at least the 16 gauge or something that's thick enough, not anything that's too thin, but otherwise that's nothing that's too specific to speaker cable.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And are you thinking about other products besides an amplifier? Are you thinking about other versions of the 5C or something?
I know we discussed in the past about bringing back some of the other models and kind of somewhat against that in the sense that, you know, Oratone's known for small studio monitors. So you try to get out and do something what you're not good at, sometimes that can backfire. But I think we saw some things, obviously, to keep in line with the small studio brand where you keep, maybe make a different version of the 5C, maybe more high-performance version or higher power version of the, like, for instance, having the 5C that can handle a little more power wattage or can be pushed a little harder, you know, kind of keeping it within, have a different product, but keeping it within little small cube-shaped speaker, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, if anything, I would go smaller rather than larger. As an example, I know a lot of mixers that use the crappiest computer speakers that they can find and listen to their final mix on that through the computer. And $10 speakers sometimes can really make a huge difference where it can tell you things that your, you know, $10,000 ones aren't really telling you. So if anything, going down market would actually be better in a way.
Yeah. And I think also sometimes that's somewhat some misconception with the 5C is a lot of people think they're supposed to sound bad. That isn't necessarily the case. You know, it's more so to tell you how it's really going to hear to what it really sounds like. There's kind of some kind of magic to that or something that's hard to explain about that, why it actually does that. But it really does work for engineers. You know, a lot of people say, oh, they're supposed to sound, they're, you know, that was always something that frustrated my grandfather, and some people call them the horror tones. They weren't really made to sound bad. They're made, if the mix is good, they sound great. If it doesn't sound good, they sound bad, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, the way and I haven't used them for a while, but as I remember, it was the mid-range that was so good on them, and that was because it was only a single point source. There were no other speakers involved, so you got a really true version of the mid-range, and you kind of knew where everything sat. It was especially good for guitars, because that's the guitars and vocals, and that's where everything sits, and it gave you a very true picture of what was going on. So that's what I remember was the big attraction, not so much that it sounded good or bad. It was just true in that mid-range there.
Exactly, and that's what we did with this, to replicate that purpose and with the new ones. And obviously, not everybody, a lot of people, some people, you know, get them, and it takes, that's part of the education process. A lot of people today, some people don't necessarily understand, you know, or get it, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
You know, and some people do, or I say majority of people do.
How important is the cabinet in all this, and was it difficult to replicate?
As in, what do you mean?
The cabinet of the 5C, the enclosure of the 5C.
Oh, not necessarily. I mean, that hasn't changed at all from, I mean, obviously some of the first ones back in the day used just particle board, and then got upgraded to what you see in a lot of your cabinets today with MDF. You know, it's a little bit more, handles kind of better for this, for speaker building. You know, we didn't change that at all. We kept the same dimensions. And a lot of the cabinet, obviously, the sound has to do with the internal volume of the cube a certain way.
Mm-hmm.
And that changed a little bit over the years, a little bit. Obviously, back at first, they're a little bit shallower cabinet. And then over time, they kind of got added a little bit of depth in it to get a little bit more bass response and things like that. You play around with internal volume to change the sound. But for the most part, that's staying pretty same. So it does have a lot to do with the response, in the sense of the internal volume of the cube needs to be a certain way to get the kind of response to help make the response what it needs to be. Most of it has to do with the driver, but some of it, the cabinet definitely does, the internal volume definitely does play a role in all that.
I had no idea that changed. I always thought it was the same, regardless.
Yeah, I think the old ones were actually about 5. You look at, they stayed the same kind of width. And the width, and the width has always been 6.5 inches, but some of the original ones were only 5, and you know, about 5.5, 5 3/8 inches deep. And starting kind of more going into the mid-80s, they changed to 6 inches deep.
Mm-hmm.
You actually see some of the other competitors out in the market, they make a full shape cube that's 6.5 by 6.5 by 6.5.
Yeah.
You know, we've kept it always 6.5, 6 inches deep, and that kind of where you can play around the bass response. You don't want too much bass. So that's why I think my grandfather always kept it smaller than the rest of the cube. It wasn't actually a full cube.
Was your grandfather an audiophile or anything? I mean, how did he get into this?
You know, he started, it's always an interesting question. I know he, when he got out of the military, I think, you know, in the 50s, he was always just, I think, he's a very innovative person, and always kind of an engineer in a sense, and not a student engineer, but an engineer just kind of trying to invent things and build things. And he just kind of fell into the speaker. He started building home speakers, and I think it just kind of took off from there and ended up to where it was today, or the Oratone we know.
Was the 5C intended for the recording studio, or was it just happenstance that it wound up there?
I think at first, I read some old articles where, you know, my grandfather was just getting interviewed, and the original purpose was actually for a home auxiliary speaker when he first was building it. You know, the small cube that kind of go in corners of houses and grocery stores and restaurants. And I think over time, as he was filling with it and playing around with it more, he kind of realized, oh, hey, this is works great for this. You know, I think obviously quickly he turned it into that and went with that and developed as that more. But and since he kind of fell across it, in the sense, his original, when he was first developing the idea, it kind of changed into something else as he kept working on it.
Yeah. Was Quincy Jones the one that actually put it over the top? Because I remember clear as day those adverts in all the magazines, Quincy leaning over the console and whatever the quote was about the, can't mix without the 5Cs or something. It was very powerful because Quincy was the man.
The Quincy Jones knows quality. I believe that the one you were speaking to, the one he's like leaning over the meter bridge.
Yeah, yeah.
Yep. And I think at that point it was already pretty famous. I know when he came out with one of the newer, one of his first ones of the 5C, which might have been, which was in the early 70s, he, a particular model when he came out with, I think when he started using them or marketing them more as for student engineers for the mid-range, for that purpose that he, for that particular purpose, it kind of was already famous by that point. There was already a lot of stuff. stuff out there in the 70s, and it was already taken off at that point before even Quincy Jones and all those guys got involved.
Okay, I didn't realize that. So what are you doing today for marketing? As long as people understand that they're available again, I mean, the brand kind of sells itself in a way.
Yeah, it did. Obviously, you know, once it kind of hit out there and people talking about on blogs and message forums, and, you know, we kind of ramped it up slowly in the sense that, you know, we kind of challenged it before as we're starting, you know, in a sense, kind of from ground zero on trying to build up, you know, the inventory at first. And, you know, obviously with investing in capital, everything to kind of get the business going, we didn't want to be too careful with taking on too many dealers or distributors at first, because we wanted to make sure we were stocking, meeting the van we could meet, and we kind of slowly built it from there. So over the past year, we're slowly starting to get into more magazines and articles and reviews, and kind of slowly we have more plans this year to start doing more marketing and advertising as we're starting to catch up and be able to meet demand more. I think that's kind of our plan. We've been trying to be a more slower organic growth at first and not try to get too ahead of ourselves.
Yeah. Is the United States the biggest market?
Yes, by far.
Yeah. Is there a demand in other parts of the world? Just out of curiosity, was there ever the penetration in other parts of the world, or was it just the United States for the most part?
Pretty much all over the world. I mean, you used to probably when I first started this, you know, when I was just back when we first came out with having some stock and built the first speakers over a couple of years ago, when I was just literally finishing up the website and hadn't finished it yet, and I posted online, and before I even posted anywhere else, when we did our first limited edition, I said, okay, we're gonna make ones with, we had like 150 to 100 drivers, and I said, okay, we're gonna make the cabinets myself out of my dad's shop, and you know, everything like that, and I said, okay, let's see if this is gonna work or not. You know, I think literally I hadn't been away from my computer over the weekend. I took my emails on Monday morning. I had probably 50 emails from people all over the world, you know, from Russia and Asia and just all over the place, you know, saying, how do I get these? And that's how the first ones were sold, and kind of showed how much of an impact these made across the world. So obviously the U.S. market, and I'd say after that, you know, in Europe is the next biggest market. But in the sense that the speakers over the years have made it literally all over the world.
I must have felt good. I bet.
Yeah, so I think that was showing kind of how the legacy that my grandfather had built with these and made impact to people all across the world. It was kind of almost, I knew beforehand, but just kind of seeing it, how quickly the response of, oh, wow, these are back.
Yeah.
And emails from people in Russia saying, you want to get, how can I get the magic cube? And, you know, things like that. It was pretty, very overwhelming.
Yeah, I bet.
The support that we got.
Yeah, that sounds pretty cool, actually. Okay, last question for you. What's the best piece of business advice that you've kind of learned through all this? Or did someone give you a piece of business advice that you followed, or was there a lesson that you learned?
That's a really tough question. I think, you know, you kind of learn more as you go in that sense. And I think the biggest piece of advice, I'd say, is my father has given me when you start this, because, you know, in a lot of ways, starting a business is like going to war every day, you know, with just a lot of different reasons. But, you know, my father kind of said, you know, always take it one day at a time.
Yeah.
And keep things simple, I think, which is a lot of the things we've done with the passive stuff and not trying to grow too big too fast. Just keep things simple and take it one day at a time.
And your dad wasn't interested in the business himself?
He's helped me out with, yeah, you know, kind of when we first started, helped me build the cabinets. And, you know, first we were literally building everything by hand at first. You know, we had to start from somewhere. And I said, well, I don't have the capital to throw into getting thousands of these made, but I can at least build what I can. How do we do this? And he has a lot of woodworking experience and has his own shop. And I said, how do I do this? And that's kind of started. And he kind of mentored me through that process. And it's been an unbelievable help to me in that sense.
Are they manufactured in Nashville now?
Yes, yeah, so we built some of the cabinets here, and the drivers are manufactured from a manufacturer here in the States. So everything, the speaker is built in the United States, made in USA still. And I think that's helped us, obviously, a lot with the quality control.
Yeah. Well, good for you. Great, Alex. Thank you. Great success story. It's good to have Aritone back. And I'm so glad that you're doing so well with it, because it's a product, it's a brand that, boy, everybody in the studio business knows and we all look for so many years and couldn't find an alternative. So thanks for bringing it back.
Yeah, I really appreciate the time, and I'm glad that you, thank you for all the support.
To find out more about Alex and Aritone, go to aritonesoundcubes.com. AuritoneSoundCubes. All one word, AuritoneSoundCubes.com. Thanks for listening and being in my inner circle. Remember, if you have any questions or comments, you can send them to questions@BobbyOInnerCircle.com or any suggestions for guests. I always like to hear those suggestions, so keep them coming. Thanks very much. To listen to other episodes of Bobby Osinski's Inner Circle, go to BobbyOsinski.com and select the podcast tab, or you can go to BobbyOInnerCircle.com, or you can find it on iTunes, Stitcher, Mixcloud, and now Google Play. At BobbyOsinski.com and BobbyOInnerCircle.com, you'll find a sign-up form for my newsletter and for alerts for new podcasts. This is Bobby Osinski. I will see you next time.